Hey guys, welcome to Experience Pointers Podcast. We are a group of people that talk about RPG, specifically focusing on GMing, different aspects of running games, and maybe we'll have a few suggestions for you to use in your own games. I'm Megan Caves, and sitting next to me is...
Jordan Caves Kellerman. And then sitting next to me...
is Gaurav Gulati. That's me.
Great, and today we are going to talk about how to get started GMing your own game. So if you are brand new to it, hopefully we will have some, maybe, I don't know, tips, make it a little less scary, because I'll tell you, it's scary for me as I have yet to GM, which I will be trying soon.
But it doesn't have to be, and we're not necessarily setting out to do a podcast that is going to like hold new GM's hands like all the way through doing stuff.
Sure.
But we thought it might be useful to do an episode where we talk about like some of your options, if you're wanting to get into RPG gaming, and maybe talk a little bit about what the strengths and weaknesses of some of those options are and see which one might be a good fit for you and your players.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess since I'm the newest one to this, what, like, Gaurav, what would you say would be the best place to start? I mean, you're kind of new to GMing too, right? Sort of.
Yeah, I've only been doing it for about a year, so I'm fairly new, newer than you, at least, Jordan. The best place to start, was that your question?
Mm-hmm.
Best place to start. I mean, every major RPG, D&D, Pathfinder, even Shadowrun has like their own beginner box to get anybody started. And that's a really nice way, because it's usually $20. It comes with like a pre-made adventure, pre-made character sheets.
Wait. But hold on. Before we get into any of that, you, Gaurav, have a very different way that you think people should get started based on your own experience.
I do. I was going
to
get to that.
You were going
to
get to it?
Yep.
Did I interrupt you and mess up your flow?
Who knows?
I thought you were going to get into the other points first.
No.
I'm going to put my hand on my face and just look at
you. Were you supposed to do that one?
No.
No? Okay. Should we start over?
We can.
I don't think so.
So the beginner boxes are a great way to start. Another way, I think, and this is kind of sort of my foray into it, was board games.
Oh, I see. That was the segue right there.
That was
the segue, man,
yeah.
I totally stomped all
it
over that.
It was built in.
Yeah.
Board games are a great way to get a group of friends together, maybe once or twice a week, to, you know, sit down at a table and do something that's like a tabletop RPG. There's dice, usually. There's game pieces, or usually terrain, maybe, depending on the board game. And that gets them in the mindset, and you can find out if your friends are, like, the cooperative type to, you know, play an RPG together. Because sometimes you might just have friends who are just not that, you know?
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah.
They might just be murder hobos. And there's nothing wrong with an RPG full of murder hobos, but, like... that's not for me. Like, I would know that up front if we were playing, like, Munchkin or something.
Yeah.
And everybody was just backstabbing each other with no teamwork. Like, probably not the best RPG.
I mean, in fairness, that is the point of Munchkin.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
So, I mean, it's kind of hard to tell from playing Munchkin whether or not. So, on the subject of, like, those sorts of board games, I know you had some, like, more specific suggestions for, like, board games that are sort of already aligned with the RPG world, or things that kind of might give you a feel for the flavor and the sort of things you'd be doing in an RPG.
Yeah.
What was that one that you were a
what
fan
was
of
that one? So Wizards of the Coast makes D&D board games, and they have been for maybe like 5 or 6 years now. And I think the one I played was either The Wrath of Ashardalon or Ravenloft. And it's a very similar system. Basically, you shuffle up a bunch of terrain tiles. And you don't need a GM, it just, you run a scenario, and essentially, when you put out a tile, it tells you what monsters just spawn, the monsters move automatically and do stuff based on what they are, and you go through this dungeon, and you delve through it, and you can roleplay if you want to, you don't have to, it's totally optional, but, you know, it gets you in that mindset of doing a cooperative thing against bad guys with friends. And so those board games are like $50 a pop, and they come with a ton of minis, and they're a great way to get started in that, an easy way to, you know, get people into tabletop gaming.
And then I've never played one of those, but I've read a little bit about them. I know like the different players choose like characters that are the different D&D character classes, and then you can even level up and gain new abilities like as you run through the game. So it's really close, it sounds like, to running sort of like a GM-less session.
Exactly. Yeah. And it has those really cool, flavorful D&D settings like Ravenloft, and I think they did the Underdark, and there was one more that I can't remember off the top of my head. We're going to put all this in the show notes, though.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll put those up so you guys can check those out.
So you're sort of talking about it, coming at it as like, make sure you've got a group too.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
You want to have a group that's in the right mindset to play RPGs, I think.
Yeah.
I've heard this a lot on the internet, that people say, no D&D is better than bad D&D. Which means, like, don't force yourself to sit through a bad session of D&D just because you're like, well, I could... It's either this or nothing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better to be nothing if it gets that bad. Maybe that's another totally different podcast, but I'm just saying, if at the get-go.
Well, because some people, like, we are lucky enough to live in Los Angeles, and there is a huge gaming community, like, in and around the city.
Good humble brag. Good humble brag.
Yeah, yeah. it's not a humble brag. I mean, it's straight up a brag, I think. But, like, where I grew up in the suburbs of Houston, like, there was no game store. There was no opportunity to do any of this kind of stuff, and I would have leapt at the opportunity to play any sort of D&D just when I was getting started.
Even if it was potentially bad?
I'll say I probably wouldn't have known as much about what I liked and didn't like at that point. Like, there is a certain element of, like, you got to try it to figure out what it is you like and don't like. But maybe, like, once you firmly know what it is that you want, I would say then, yeah, bad D&D is worse than no D&D. Because
absolutely.
You don't want to be playing something that's not fulfilling or scratching that itch for you.
Sure.
That makes sense. Well, what about, I mean, you, Jordan, what do you, having, because you started, I mean, you were talking about this earlier, actually, the first thing you did was GM. You didn't play.
Yes.
Right?
Well, I also had the Dragon Strike board game that I've been trying to get Gaurav to mention this whole time, but he keeps thinking I'm talking about something else.
Because
you were talking, this whole time, you're like, I'm going to talk about Dragon Strike every episode.
I was going to, but I mean,
I was like,
it in there, don't worry.
Okay. I couldn't get any of my friends to play that one, just like you couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first time I had anything to do with D&D, I was GMing in college, and I hadn't played before at that point. So maybe we should use that as a segue. So we talked about, like, the D&D board games or games like that that can kind of give you a feel of, like, if you like that style of game or if your friends are into collaborating with you or just want to murder you. Like, sometimes you have just purely competitive friends.
Sure.
Yeah.
But let's say you do give it a try. You do have a good group of friends. There are a bunch of different products, like you were saying, Gaurav, that, like, D&D puts out, Pathfinder puts out, these beginner box sets that I think, personally, I love them. Anytime a new edition of D&D comes out, like, I feel compelled to buy the starter box.
The red box.
Yeah, sure. Because it typically comes with, like, a nice set of dice. It's got a really good adventure most of the time because they put a lot into making sure, like, it's a storyline or something that's going to grab people and make them excited about playing the game.
That's welcoming for beginners.
Yeah, and I just like seeing what they do for introductory content. Like, I really think it's a fun way to get into a game.
Well, I can't remember. Was it when 4th edition came out that Jordan, you bought the box and we, like, attempted 4th with the box? That was kind of cool. I mean, because it was an easy way. I mean, it was sort of stripped down too, right?
A little bit with the 4th edition box. In 4th edition, they did a, like, throwback red box that looked a lot like the AD&D beginner box. Yeah, we had that one.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was, it was a good intro. They had a really cool solo adventure in that, which was really cool. It was sort of a choose your own adventure where you built your character and played through it, which was neat.
I did that.
Yeah. Because, you just got to sit at home and build that.
But that's cool that they do stuff like that. I think that, I mean, that makes a lot of sense as a way to start. It's like, okay, here's all the stuff I need and I can just use this to just get a taste of what this is going to be.
You don't have to read
like.
Through like a 300 page monster manual or Dungeon Master's guide. You just need this usually 50 or 60 page book that tells you the core rules.
They'll strip it down to like the basics and they'll just deal with characters that go up to like maybe 3rd or 4th level.
Yep.
So you're not looking at a huge tome of all of the spells your characters have access to like as they level up. It's just like a sampling.
Yeah.
Which is great, because that's intimidating. Those big books are intimidating.
Yeah, yeah. So I genuinely recommend those. Even if you have, like, an inkling of interest in D&D, just buy one of these beginner boxes. They're $20. It's a nice little box, and you get everything you need. And I guarantee you'll get inspiration just from that, just from having this thing and looking at it.
Absolutely. So the D&D 5th edition, they have a really great beginner box that I bought. And
The D&D starter set.
Yeah. And they have a really great starter adventure and some pre-made characters in there.
Yep.
If you want to try Pathfinder, because really D&D and Pathfinder are two of the like the biggest names.
Yep.
That, like, most people want to try the medieval fantasy games and they want to play one of those. Pathfinder also has a really nice beginner box.
Yes.
That one comes with it's got like a double-sided dry erase battle map and like a really cool adventure as well. They have a stripped down rule system. I also own that one.
I own that one too. Yeah,
yeah. And we and I ran you and some other friends through that, Megan, through that introductory adventure.
Comes with all those pawns, do the cardboard cutout tokens, which is awesome and stands for them.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's really cool.
They also sort of function as a really great sort of like jump start to your GM toolbox because you get either miniatures or dice or like, you know, those sort of like player standees, like a bunch of stuff that kind of gives you a feel for it. Those are a really great place to start. But I will also say the thing that can be a little bit bad about D&D or Pathfinder, and like we said, the beginner boxes tend to get around this a little bit by presenting a more stripped down version. The rules complexity, even for those sorts of things, can sometimes be a bit overwhelming for people.
Someone who's fresh off or on the boat, off the boat? I don't know how that works. Fresh. Is there a boat involved?
I think if you were going to be freshly on the boat of RPGs, because if you were fresh off the boat, you'd be like, I'm done with RPGs and I'm ready to do something else.
The fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say just as a player, some of the stuff that I have to figure out in D&D, especially at the beginning, was overwhelming. So just thinking about as a GM, I mean, you've like more than quadrupled the things you need to know and do. And yeah, that's...
So you've seen some of the beginner boxes that Grav and I are talking about, Megan. As someone who has not yet GM'd, what would your first impression be of that? Like, would that be intimidating, even the box, for you to like get started trying to GM a game of D&D or Pathfinder using one of those?
I think it would be way less intimidating, actually. I think that would be a really good place to start, simply because it's like they've already sort of broken down there's a barrier there. It's like, okay, this is all I have to deal with. This is a lot less. I've got these pieces, I've got this terrain, or I've got this whatever, I've got this storyline. As a place to start, that I actually think that would be really beneficial. I mean, obviously that comes probably with its own potential issues or things that would be hard. But no, that actually, I mean, it always comes back to me with that whole thing of it's a lot easier to be creative within constraint or within some sort of confines or something like that than it is somebody just going, come up with something, anything, and you have no box. When you have a box, I feel like you can be a whole lot more creative. And so literally with this box, I feel like that would bring more to my mind, if that makes sense.
Sure. And did you ever run any of those beginner box things,
Gruff? I did. I ran Lost Mines of Phandelver. I ran it through Fantasy Grounds because I bought it again on that. Also still $20. Okay. Really good deal. You get a whole adventure.
Nice.
And it was great. It slowly taught, because I was playing with two people who hadn't played D&D, and I had been playing for about 6 months at this point. And I ran them through Lost Mines. It took us, I can't remember, maybe 10 sessions to get through the whole thing. It's actually a pretty long adventure.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of side quests you can do. It's a really good way to start playing D&D. I highly recommend it.
The adventure doesn't reinvent the wheel or anything. It's not going to do anything you haven't necessarily seen in a D&D game before, but it does a really good job of introducing people to like the tropes of D&D.
Yeah, it starts off slow. And one of the good things about Lost Mines of Phandelver is that they still reference it in current material. So if you bought, Storm King's Thunder, and maybe the newest book as well, they have basically a place you can jump onto that adventure if you had just finished Lost Mines.
Yeah.
Like a way to connect it to the current adventure, because you're at level 5 essentially, and there's a way to like jump in into the new adventure. So that's really cool that they still think about that stuff.
I thought that was really cool too. Another starting point that you could try. So maybe like if you weren't interested in the sword and sorcery genre, and maybe you wanted to try something different, or possibly like maybe even the $20 or $25, I think the Pathfinder one was a little bit more expensive, price point might even be a little bit too high for you at that point.
Sure.
Which I think we talked about last session, and I will probably continue to talk about as much as Gaurav talks about Dragonstrike, I'm a really big fan of the Savage Worlds game system. And the core rulebook for that system is $10. So that, you can buy that, and literally you can, that's all you need to play a bunch of different games.
Well, also, it's so much smaller than the D&D or Pathfinder books.
It's a lot less daunting.
So, I will say this for Savage Worlds. The book is smaller, it is a lot less intimidating looking. You don't, like, when you're playing D&D, if you move past the beginner box set and you really want to get into it, ideally as a GM you would have the player's handbook, the dungeon master's guide, and the monster manual. And all three of those things are, you know, like textbook sized. They're not gigantic, but they're a bit intimidating. The Savage Worlds book is much smaller and more digestible. However, it is much more rules dense. There are no filler paragraphs in the Savage Worlds rulebook. So you have to be paying more attention when you're reading it, because the rules are kind of, it's a well-written book. I like it a lot, but there are some things where one rule is said only in one place in the book. And if you're just kind of skimming past that, you might miss how to adjudicate things in one situation. But the cool thing about Savage Worlds is it works a little bit differently than the standard like RPG system does. So with hit points and stuff like that. And Savage Worlds is genre neutral. So you could use it to play a sword and sorcery game. You could also use it to play like a sci-fi game or a modern day horror game or something with no supernatural elements where you're all like trying to do a bank heist or whatever.
And you can kind of apply all that yourself, or there are different like settings that they make too, right? Mm-hmm. That they kind of give you the flavor.
They
which
have
is cool.
really great settings.
They really do.
Yeah, all of their settings are super interesting. And it's, I think it can be a fun one to like start people out with. So the D&D core mechanic is the D20 mechanic.
Yep.
Most of your rolls, you're going to roll a 20-sided die and then add the appropriate modifier, and that's what happens. Savage Worlds works a little bit differently. You're going to use more of your polyhedral dice, but in general, the target number you're trying to get to is 4. Mm-hmm. So in D&D, a lot of times, like you're rolling off against someone else. In Savage Worlds, most of the time, you're just trying to roll a 4 or better, which is, it kind of just presents a different sort of gameplay at the table.
Yeah.
The thing that is trickier about Savage Worlds, which you sort of mentioned, Megan, is it doesn't give you that box in the same... Literally and sure. figuratively, it doesn't give you a box. It's just a book, and it's super wide open. It gives you the ability to tweak things for a variety of different settings, and that can be intimidating to a new GM. Because
intimidating as a player.
I mean, it's intimidating to me as a fairly seasoned GM, because I'm like, I have so many ideas for games I want to run. I could run this. Ooh, I could run like an Avatar The Last Airbender game. Ooh, but I also want to do a modern horror noir. Or I could run like, I really love to run Sword and Sorcery in Savage World. It's hard to like narrow down what it is specifically you want to run.
But that's actually something that I would be interested to hear you guys at home, what your experiences have been, because I don't know many people who didn't start with D&D or Pathfinder, maybe Pathfinder.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't, like, I feel like when somebody goes, okay, I want to GM something, I mean, it's generally D&D. So I'd be really interested to hear, I don't know if you guys know anyone, but I'd be interested to hear from you guys too at home if you know anyone, or if you as either a GM or even a player started with a different system than D&D or Pathfinder. I think that would be really interesting to kind of see, because I just don't think that's very common. So my guess is if like somebody is going, hey, I want to GM something, that they're probably just going to go, where do I need to look at D&D? What do I need to GM D&D, right?
Right.
Is that, I mean, that's been my experience. Has that been you guys?
Yeah, I mean, in the cultural consciousness, people don't necessarily know the RPG world, but they have heard of Dungeons & Dragons. Right. I would say almost everyone has at least heard of Dungeons & Dragons mm-hmm. and has a loose idea of what it is. There's a reason that it's the big one, you know, like it has that sort of name recognition. People know what they're getting into a little bit.
Either positive or negative connotations, depending upon where you heard it.
Right.
Very true. Very true.
Mm-hmm. So Savage Worlds doesn't have those sort of constraints, and it can be a little bit stranger because a lot of modern video game RPGs have taken a lot of their inspiration for mechanics from D&D
over
the years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So getting into a system like Savage Worlds that doesn't have hit points and instead has wounds that you take, it's a little bit more of an adjustment from what you may already be used to playing video games or even board games that are based on D&D-like things.
Yeah.
Well, so I feel like we've talked about getting started with the like rules system or stuff like that, but there's a lot more to GMing than that. I mean, it depends upon, I suppose, the type of GM and what you like to focus on. But as far as getting started with the other aspects, like the role-playing aspects or the creating story aspects or creating an interesting environment for your players, a good table dynamic, do you guys have any thoughts on like what to do to...
I think that might honestly be better saved for a future episode.
Sure,
I think we have a lot more to say about that than we probably have time left to...
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about it really quickly, but like...
Yeah.
I actually have one more type of game I'd like to talk about really quickly.
I apologize.
I know. It's right here on my outline.
Okay.
I think that... So you've got $20 to $25 for a D&D box set. You've got $9.99 for a Savage Worlds book.
What's cheaper than that, Jordan?
Where's
free.
This guy?
What's cheaper than that?
Nothing's
free things.
Free. Nothing's free.
There
Jordan.
Are free things. We have this great thing called the internet now that
what?
Wasn't really around in any sort of useful capacity when I was a kid. But now it's great. And you can find a huge number of rules light systems that are basically 1 to 2 page PDFs. And that whole, the whole game system is contained in those two pages.
Well, that's the game system I'm going to run in the future. Magic and Mischief is literally one page.
It's a one page.
It's based on Lasers and Feelings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's adapted. But okay. And I haven't looked at that one, but I imagine it is also very short.
Yeah. My favorite rules light game, which is Roll for Shoes, does not even take up a page. It is just a couple sentences
an
long.
An index card. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is super short. And those are often. I think if you have friends that are like, I don't really know what an RPG is, and I don't, it sounds really nerdy, I don't really get how it works, like everyone dresses up and has swords and like
That's
hits each
I
other. Roll for Shoes or something like that can be a really great one to kind of be like, well, here, let's just play a quick game of this and I can show you sort of how it works. Because a lot of the rules light systems, they'll just give you very basic mechanics. Like maybe you'll have one die that you roll. And only in certain situations. You don't have complicated characters with a lot of extra special abilities. It's just sort of like you have a very simple set of things that you can do, and then you just sort of play through how your character would react in that situation, which is the heart of what a role-playing game is.
I think it's kind of interesting because you have actually introduced new players to all these different systems. So you did Roll for Shoes for some people, and that was their... No, I guess that wasn't their first system. They played D&D first.
No, but Dennis Savage and DeAndre had only ever played Roll for Shoes.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, yeah. So that was kind of different. And then Savage Worlds after that. So mm-hmm. I don't even think they played D&D yet.
They haven't. They
which
haven't
is
played
interesting.
D&D.
Whoa.
Yeah, so their story is that they haven't started with D&D.
Let's get them on the podcast.
And it's all
yeah, we will.
Me.
Yeah.
Good job, you.
Yeah, but yeah, I think rules light systems can be really great, and it can be a fun and easy. They tend to be faster paced. They tend to be like single session things that you want to knock out in one session, and they tend to be a little bit zanier, a little bit more relaxed. Not all of them. Some of them are actually really. There's a Cthulhu one that's actually really cool. That's rules light.
You can do a lot with that, but that can be intimidating in its own way.
It can. Yeah. I will say rules light systems can put a lot of pressure on the GM because there's no written adventure for you to follow. You're literally, like, when I run Roll for Shoes, ideally, I will improvise the entire thing. Like, I will go in only with an idea of where things are going to start and then just take it from there. And that can be intimidating for new GMs, I think. And even some established GMs. It depends on what your play style is.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever run, like, a fully improvised game session, Gruff?
A fully improvised game session? Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay, yes. I have a great story about this. Last year at PAX Prime, me and my friends who go every year... were at Cafe Mox, which is a board game place they have over there. We were looking for a board game to play, and this is like after I've been on Saving Throw for like maybe 5 months or something. And I was like, guys, D&D's so great, you should try it sometime. We were looking for a board game, and they had the starter box there, and I was like, guys, let's play D&D. And they're like, okay, I mean, is that possible? I'm like, yes, it's totally possible. And so I got the red box. I gave them two pregens that came out of there because they have I can't remember how many exactly, but they have like five pregens in there. I gave them, and I'm like, okay, you're in a town, and this is what's happening. I made up a totally on-the-fly, using nothing from the book adventure, and they loved it. And it was like, it was only like an hour and a half long, but after that's what started us playing D&D together on Fantasy Grounds.
Oh, cool.
It's because that's where we started, and they're like, let's make these characters for real.
Oh, awesome.
And have an adventure.
That's really cool.
So, yeah, that was totally improvised, and it was fun. Yeah, just get together with some people.
Was that your first time GMing, basically?
No, I had done it on Saving Throw before then.
Oh, okay.
But only
okay.
as a one-off.
Is that the Thornwatch?
No, I did. I took over from Mason once for doing D&D.
Oh,
okay.
To do my character's backstory.
Cool.
So, yeah, I've done that before.
Okay. Wow. Awesome. So,
but it was very early on in my GM career.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, that's really cool. And, I mean, that's the kind of thing you can improvise in a lot of different game systems. Mm-hmm. I feel like D&D isn't as suited for that, unless because there's all the monster stat blocks and stuff that you need to like have access to at least.
Yeah, it requires a little more knowledge of the system as opposed to other games, I think. Like if you're a seasoned vet of D&D, you could probably improvise it really easy. But if you're new at it, it's going to take a little more looking through books and stuff while you're playing the game.
Sure.
Unless you're just the best at improv. So.
Right. And I will also say the group of players you have makes a big difference about how well an improvised game can go. If the players will take some ownership of it and start making decisions about the world and like be really active in their decision making, an improvised game can be a lot of fun. So if you have a group of gamers that want to get started with an RPG and they seem like they're creative, they're fun, like outspoken people, an improvised rules light game can be a really good way to introduce them to the concept of RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, what do we think? I think we hit the nose of that one pretty well. Should we check out our Reddit question of the moment?
Let's do it.
Reddit question of the
moment. So this was a question on the D&D subreddit, submitted 19 hours ago, which what's today the today's the 11th, so yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime or I guess late Saturday. Mm-hmm. Basically the title of this is "My character died when I missed a session. Should I leave the group?" This is playing 5th edition. And there's a long story here that basically says while they were not there, they were out because they had exams. They could not make it.
Looks like they missed two game sessions.
They missed two sessions, and they were stressed out because of the exams, and they just got a message on their Discord that they were sharing with their players that, hey, sorry, your character got disintegrated, no further information, and nothing to roll or anything. That just happened. And, like, I mean, that sounds awful.
Yeah,
that sounds terrible that your character was affected in a decision that you weren't even part of.
Yeah, I personally do not think your character should be dying when you're not there.
Yeah.
Unless something was set up beforehand of like, yes, my character is going to go on and whatever.
Sure.
They're in your hands, but I can't imagine that particular aspect of it is.
I personally, when I run a game, I don't like to have people's characters present in a way that they could be killed if they're not there. I mean, depending on the game group, I'll either do the sort of hand-wavy thing like, oh, they're there, but they're just sort of off-screen the whole time and don't really have a lot to do in this episode. Or, ideally, for me, I'll come up with an in-game reason why they're not there.
Right.
And have them doing something else while the rest of the party is doing that.
Yeah.
Because it's super crappy
to
be like, oh, like, especially, you know, depending on your group, they might be like, oh, we'll have this person who's not here, have their character check the door for traps.
Right.
Like, just open it.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem like what happened here. This actually, this person goes on to say that, the whole party got almost TPK'd two sessions prior to that, and their character was the only one that was left.
And they've only been playing for a few months.
And they're dying very extensively. So that seems like, it seems like the GM is running them through a super hardcore game.
Right.
But they seem kind of new to RPGs, and so I think the worry is, like, hey, is this a common thing?
Right.
Or does this mean that they don't want me to play anymore?
Right.
And I think the easiest thing to do in this situation, without knowing the GM, is to, like, send him a message, have a conversation with him, and be like, hey, you know, what's going on? Like, why did this happen? And then, is there any way we can keep this from happening in the future? Like, I'll make a new character or whatever, but I'd rather not have this be totally out of my hands.
I definitely think this is a point in which you potentially go, okay, do I enjoy playing with this group? If this is the particular type of game they want to play, am I mean she's asking if she should leave the group. I think it would depend upon how much fun you're having and if you know, enjoy this, because I have played in some games with some people I didn't enjoy the way the GM run it, or I didn't enjoy the other players, or I just didn't enjoy the world or whatever. I didn't mean I disliked those people. I just, you know, it's important that if you're doing it, like sort of you said, you want to have fun, you know, it should be good. But as far as, like, maybe even outside of this question, because the original question is just, my character died when I missed a session, should I leave the group? So I think when I initially saw that, I thought of it as like, oh, if my character dies, then do I not get to play anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Which I feel like maybe has been a question before for new people. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't really feel like that's what this person's asking.
No.
Clearly the rest of the party already made new characters when they died previously.
But I wondered if that was something too, if that was something we should touch on. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think this kind of touches on another thing, like from the GM, like if you're going to run a super punishing, really hardcore game, you have to be upfront about that with your players from the get-go, so they know what to expect.
Yeah.
Well, that's communication, right? I mean, it's about being able to communicate with your group and deciding, like, hey, we all really want to play a rough system, and we understand what that's going to be, or we want to play an improvised system. We don't want to focus on rules, or I don't like it role-playing. I want to crunch numbers.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Should be on the same page, I mean, hopefully, with what you're doing.
So the other side of this I want to talk about is if you're a GM, if this happens to you, like, not that you meant it to happen, but, like, that player was there and, like, well, that character failed the thing, so they died. You can always fudge it. You know, you're rolling the dice. You could say this happens or that happens. Jordan was sort of saying this earlier, but sort of make a MacGuffin or something that can whisk the character away for a temporary amount of time. That's what we do on Iron Key Chronicles right now, where Tom has this book that essentially stores our character and puts another one out so a guest can come on. And there's a bunch of pages in this book that have a bunch of trapped characters in a prison. Okay, cool. So we do. It's a super fun, easy MacGuffin, and we're totally into it.
Yeah.
And so that way, a person doesn't get killed while, you know, they're on the adventure.
And it also potentially opens you up to interesting, like, story hooks in the future. Like, what happens if that book gets taken from you guys?
Yes.
Like, that can be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that book is, it's pretty cool.
I was going to say, you actually did something similar on Wildcard since Dom has been gone. He just went on his own adventure.
Right. Which we've been role playing, you know, on Twitter. But that's, I mean, that's more of a stream thing. I will say this sort of happened, to me in a home game one time. We were playing, and what should have been a relatively easy encounter with some goblins went really bad, and one of the players got technically would have been killed. And it was like our second game session with these level one characters, and I was like, that's super lame. Like, that's not a fun story.
Yeah.
So I had the goblins, everyone else managed to escape, and I had the goblins keep this guy alive, but keep him captive.
Okay.
And then the next session, I had that guy, I built out the character sheet for what was his mortal enemy in town, and had a storyline reason where that guy was forced to go rescue his original PC while playing as another character. Mm-hmm. And that kind of opened up a lot of more fun story beats. I feel
he enjoyed it, I think.
He had a lot of fun. But yeah, I think killing someone, especially when they're not there.
Yeah.
I
think it is okay, though, as a GM to if you ask them first to play a character while they're not there, because like sometimes maybe that's what they want, like maybe they're going away to like a trip out of town for like 2 months or something, and you want to continue having that character around. They would love to hear stories of what their character's doing while they're out of town, doing fun things, as long as they're not getting disintegrated by zombie beholders. Unless that's what they're into, you know.
But again, I think this all comes back to like GM communication with the players.
Absolutely.
Like being really clear about what expectations are on both sides will prevent this sort of confusion, like, and these feelings, like this player literally feels like they're being pushed out of the group in a way because their character was killed when they weren't there, and that just feels so weird to them. So I think that whole situation can typically be avoided if everyone just sort of communicates from the outset a bit better.
Yeah.
I think so.
Cool.
All right. Well, I think we should probably wrap this episode up now.
Sounds good.
Maybe we should talk about where everyone can find all of us and then where they can see us streaming. So you want to start, Gaurav?
Sure. My name is Gaurav Gulati, and you can find me on Twitter at @GXG. I'm also streaming on Twitch at twitch.tv/GXG. And you could always also find me on Saving Throw, which is at Saving Throw Show, on Twitter and all the other things as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I am Jordan Callerman. You can find me on Twitter at Jordan Callerman. That's CallarMan. That'll be in the show notes too. And then you can also see me running Wild Cards, which is my Savage Worlds Deadlands Reloaded show, on Saving Throw every Friday. And that's at twitch.tv/Saving Throw Show. And that's at 8 p.m. Pacific time.
Yep. And I am Megan Caves. You can find me on Twitter at Megan Caves, and it's spelled MEGHANCAVES.
Fancy.
I am also on Wild Cards, the Friday show. I am a player on that show. You can also follow my character, Rosaline S. Byrne, at Wild_Meg, M-E-G. And you can follow Jordan at Wild_GM2, and that's his character on there. We do lots of fun stuff, but yeah, that's on Saving Throw Show. And then you can follow us here at our Twitter account, which is at @ExpPointersPod. So that's X Pointers Pod. That's a hard one. That's
at X Pointers Pod.
Ah,
it's pretty easy.
No, it's not.
Really,
Shut up.
You say it like six times
Shut
in
up.
A row,
it's real hard. You guys just try saying it at home like over and over again. It's real hard.
And then, yeah, we'll also throw up in the show notes, we'll throw up some links to some of the products that we mentioned here.
Yes.
So if you guys are looking to maybe get one of those and pick them up for your home groups, we'll have a link for you to follow where you can pick that up for yourself and give it a try.
Yes.
And then please, if you are trying it for the first time, or even if you're trying a new game for the first time, shoot us a tweet or DM us or contact us and let us know how it went, what you thought about it. And then also, this is very helpful for us as a podcast, wherever you find us, wherever you download this podcast, wherever you listen to us, we'd very much appreciate you giving us a rating, leaving us a review. It makes it easier for other people to find us, and we definitely appreciate it.
We do.
Yeah.
And we also release this about a week early on the Saving Throw Show Patreon. So if you want to get access just a little bit earlier and also get some access to some other cool things from Saving Throw Show, it's at patreon.com/Saving Throw Show.
And that's for the backers at $10 and above.
Yes, $10 and above.
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So,
and it's actually not a backslash. It's just a regular slash. But Megan and I both have a tendency to call regular slashes backslashes.
That's a backslash, right?
I thought it was a backslash.
It's just a slash. A backslash is the that one. That's a backslash.
How do you know
that's a slash?
You're a backslash.
You guys are backslashes. We're all backslashes here.
Hashtag backslashes. okay, that's it for us. Have a good wherever you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a thing you can say?
I don't think so.
Have a good wherever you are.
Because that'd be like, have a good restaurant.
Have a good Los
Angeles.
Maybe
they're listening to this in a restaurant.
Have a good car.
Have a good restaurant. Enjoy your steak.
Enjoy your steak. We assume that all of our listeners are listening at a fine dining establishment while enjoying a nice steak.
Some more goat cheese on my steak, please.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.